From the studios of Teeing It Up in the Swamps of Jersey, this is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling for Thursday, April 20th, 4/20, 2017. We welcome you inside on a beautiful 56 degree and sunny day. And we are so pleased to be able to welcome in to Teeing It Up from Fox Sports, PGA Tour Live, and Top Golf. He is Mr. Shane Bacon. Hello, Shane. How are you?
Jeremy, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm fine. And I have to start this by thanking you because Shane also hosts the Clubhouse podcast. And I was sick with a cold over the weekend. And the podcast with Mike Wan from the LPGA Tour was a very enjoyable listen while being sick. So thank you, sir. Yeah, I appreciate
no
that.
No problem. He's a different thinker. I think that's what they're looking for. You know, the key is trying to think about some of the things that aren't, you know, why are people not paying attention, and just more, you know, what can we do to bring other people in? And I like that positive look over the other way.
And the thing which I love so much about Mike Wan, Shane, is that no matter what he's talking about, whether it's a brand new event, sponsor, format, you know, new point system, whatever it is, he makes you excited. He genuinely makes you want to go out and play golf after hearing that, which I give him a ton of credit for, because sometimes it can be tough to get, you know, thrilled about a brand new sponsor because it's how you deliver that announcement, and he does it in a really personable way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been lucky enough to have Mike on, and I had Keith Pelley from the European Tour on, and I mean, you know, these are both, you know, guys that are trying to attract eyeballs to a sport that, you know, isn't famously known as getting new, you know, fans. And I mean, I think, you know, Keith's big point that he made with me was, you know, there's a war on Thursdays and Fridays on the European Tour, because Thursdays and Fridays are a hard business. I mean, it's hard for people that don't love golf to tune into a first round. And you know, when you think about it, it's very, very true. And, I mean, the same can be said about the LPGA Tour for a while. It didn't necessarily have a superstar that people were latching on to after Annika kind of retired. And I just think that, you know, bringing in, you know, the importance of pro-ams and really pushing that, bringing in, you know, and accepting and embracing social media the way Mike has done. I mean, putting on the caddy bibs, things like that, that are just little tiny things that can really help out. I mean, you know, these are going to make more people interested. I mean, that was, you know, when I caddied for a couple of my friends out on the LPGA Tour a few years back, you know, the thing I really took away from that was how important those pro-ams are. And I mean, you know, Jordan Spieth can play with somebody in a pro-am, and I mean, they'll remember that moment forever. But,
yeah,
you know, if you're playing with, you know, a lesser name on the LPGA that maybe you didn't know about before the week started, I mean, if that player is personable and accepting and excited, then they just made four fans for life. I mean, that's what I kept noticing, was those fans stick to those players after that, and they never really forget about it.
Yeah, it's really, and I think part of that's the whole host family thing, too. The fact that you're not staying in hotels, you're staying with families. I think that is such a huge part of why that system works. And also, the fact that those host families, those players go back to the host families for holidays and stuff, like, that shocked me. Like, that statement, and the fact that so many female athletes the top female athlete from around the world is playing on the LPGA Tour, those were the two things that I took away from your podcast that stunned me. I had no idea. I never thought of it in the way in so many of these countries, their top female athlete is playing golf every single week. That I happen to never think about it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I was in South Korea last September. I mean, they have an LPGA channel. It's a little different than being over here. I mean, they have literally a channel dedicated to women's golf and showing women's golf tournaments and showing replays because they've got, like you said, so many of their top athletes. So, you know, we obviously can look through our lenses over here in the States and see what we see and think it's kind of the world's voice. But, you know, when you think about it from a whole bunch of different areas, I mean, it might be their best player. Their best athlete might be, you know, the 20th ranked player on the LPGA Tour, and they're going to embrace those people. So, I mean, it's a growing sport, and it's, again, I really try to give give as much time to it as I can. And I know, you know, the PGA Tour is a more popular entity, but I really like and appreciate what the LPGA does and what they've been doing. And so, you know, having Mike on and trying to get some of their players and such has been a part of the podcast that I've really enjoyed.
Yeah, I'm talking to Shane Bacon here. All right, let's go to Augusta. I was lucky enough to win the lottery back in 2012, the first year of the patron lottery, and my parents and I went on Tuesday, and that's the practice round atmosphere, which is, you know, which is kind of a free for all, and you can do what you want. You covered it, and as I would think most people who listen to your podcast or this podcast know, there's nobody inside the ropes at Augusta, which means that you can be walking down a fairway next to somebody's girlfriend, a regular average Joe who is a who helps build houses on, you know, Tuesdays, and then next to a fellow, you know, famous reporter. What's that vibe like? What's that vibe like where you may walk down the head down the fourth fairway and see Amy Mickelson right there?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say, in the sense of covering it, you've got to be thinking. I mean, it was when Phil and Jordan Spieth were paired together on Saturday, there was about five, well, about half the media center, but there was about five of us that went out together. It was like Brendan Porath of SB Nation and me and Kyle Porter and Kevin Van Valkenburg and Sean Martin. We were all going to go out. Because we wanted to follow that group. I mean, you know, we wanted to see, you know, what Spieth was going to do and, of course, see what Phil was going to do as they both were still in the Masters at the time. And we got to the first green and realized that this wasn't the same as it usually is. So, yeah, I mean, you're planning. You really have to plan. I mean, you've nailed it. I mean, being between the ropes at an event allows you to walk 18 holes with a player or a group or a situation and feel that out. And when you're at the Masters, that's not an option. So you've got to almost think your way around the golf course like a player. I mean, we're watching the first hole. We've seen his tee shots on two. We run to the right side of the hill to watch their second. Now you're up on the third green, so you're not seeing the tee shots on three. You know, it really is kind of a song and dance in a sense, just to make sure you can view the players you're trying to follow. So, you know, I've always said, I mean, the Masters is an unbelievable place to go grab a seat and watch golf. It's not the easiest thing to watch a group for 18 holes. So, I mean, you know, we saw Kent Bazemore watching a group. We saw Aaron Rodgers walking along with Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler on Sunday. I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, the wives and girlfriends are out there, you know, amongst the patrons. So it really is it's a communal feel, that's for sure, that you're out there. I mean, you run into the most random of people, too. I mean, you'll run into a course designer friend of yours, or I ran into an instructor that's working with Sean O'Hare that I used to kind of work with back in the day. I mean, it's funny when you run into these people. Like you said, it's just kind of everybody's ticket gets them in the same spot.
My parents and I were online for the famous flag picture, which you can take by the clubhouse. And one of the people we met said, "We are never here on Sunday because we can see the tournament better via TV than in person." And that stunned me. And then I thought about it and said, okay, that actually makes a lot of sense. How much of down the stretch did you spend out there trying to see Sergio, or sitting inside the media center so that your story could be written with the best possible information?
Well, I was like the cooler that day. Every time I went out, Sergio would like make bogeys or something. So, I think we watched him. I watched him on 8, 9, and 10. Actually, I watched him on 8 through 11. And that was kind of the stretch where it looked like he was going to lose it. I mean, missed the
right
on 8.
Right.
Had a good putt on 9. It didn't go, you know, bogeys 10, bogeys 11. That was kind of, you know, it was that moment where we were thinking to ourselves, well, this is it. I mean, this is when Sergio does what Sergio does. So I went in at that time because I wanted to see what everybody else was doing, because at the time, of course, it was a fairly busy leaderboard besides the big lead kind of Justin Rose had somehow made over Sergio. So I wanted to see if that was the time when Kuchar was making his big run and some of those other guys were doing that. So Yeah, I mean it's funny. I mean you're out there on the golf course, you know, with a firsthand view and firsthand account of what's happening, but you're also in a place where you're a mile from your cell phone. You're a mile from any electronic that tells you what's going on. So as a spectator, my sister came out with me on Thursday. She came out and I hung out with her for a lot of the day, kind of taking in the tournament. And when you get to see it through a spectator's eyes like that, you know, without the phone and without the distractions, and just able to kind of sit and enjoy yourself, it really is a unique experience. I mean, for somebody like me, I mean, I would love to have my phone out there. Let's not be crazy here. I mean, I would love to be able to, you know, shoot out tweets if I see something that happened, or you know, send in something if it went down to an editor or something like that. I mean, you know, that's a hard thing for us. But you know, when you actually, you know, kind of put that aside and think as a fan, you know, I'm just going to enjoy the golf. It's kind of fun. I mean, you watch the leaderboards. We sat on 16. I mean, you're watching the leaderboard change to see what the players are at when they get there, and you're kind of, you're kind of betting with, you know, with your friend or whoever, and saying, all right, what do you think Sergio's at? You know, what do you think Rory's at? What do you think these guys are at? Because you frankly have literally no idea.
Yeah, you're so blind. Yeah.
In a sense, it's kind of a unique feeling. But you know, of course, when you're trying to work it, it's something to where, you know, every 4, 5, 6 holes, you got to run back into the media center to make sure that, you know, Dustin, you know, didn't hurt himself or something. As obviously we saw what happened. I mean, that was a story that everybody was leaving the media center because the weather and the thing had been called for the day, and everybody's in their cars driving to wherever they're going when all the Dustin news came out.
So yeah,
like, where do I stop? You know?
Yeah, and this whole dynamic, I think, played out in a really interesting way, because this was exactly 7 days after the Lexi Thompson fiasco, which created one of the most amazing 18th hole scenes I've ever seen because of cell phones, and because that everybody totally knew what was happening and wanted to support her that much because they thought that it was so crazy as to what happened to her. That was because of phones.
Yeah, and I mean, and then yeah, like you said, a week later, it's a completely different, a completely different feeling, and it's two majors, you know, it's two completely different majors. And it's funny, you're right. I mean, the disconnect is on the player there. You know, it's not the media member; it's the player, because the player doesn't know what's going on. Meanwhile, we're all at home. I mean, that's what happened with that, you know, last year with us in Sacramento with the Women's U.S. Open. I mean, you know, we all knew. I mean, we all knew that the ball, the club had touched the sand, and it was going to be a penalty, and people on, you know, watching it on TV, I mean, millions of people are watching this on TV going, this person's about to get a penalty, and that player has no clue.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that is such a, there's just not much like that, you know. I mean, I guess if you fouled somebody really hard in an NBA game, and you're basically, you know, wondering if they were going to, you know, give you a flagrant one or a flagrant two, I mean, I guess there'd be a little bit of unknown there, but I mean, it's not like this. You know, it's not like watching it on TV and knowing that exactly what's about to happen with what player while that player has no clue.
It's crazy. Talking to Shane Bacon here. Speaking of Fox, you know, I think Aaron Hills is a big unknown, obviously, because so few of these players have played it. You have played it. And it looks to me, from the pictures I've seen, like another Chambers Bay. But I know that there's a different grass situation than Chambers Bay, and that the USGA, I believe, does not think they're going to have some of the same issues that happened at Chambers Bay. As someone who's played it, what can you tell us about the type of golf we will see this summer?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a, you know, the funny thing about Chambers Bay is it was on the water, but it wasn't a windy golf course. You know,
right.
It's not a place that's known to be windy. This will be windy. I mean, this is going to be, they're going to have winds up at this place, and it's going to play a factor a day or two. It really will.
Mm.
I think Aaron Hills, while people are going to look at the numbers they see on the cards, and they're going to go, oh, goodness, it's 7,600, 7,700, whatever it's going to play, you know, day to day. I mean, I think they can stretch it all the way to 8,100 if they want.
Jeez.
I don't think it's a big hitter's ballpark. I think it's a place where people that can find fairways with how dried out it'll be, I think if you get the ball in play, you're going to have a really good chance to succeed. So, I mean, I've said this name a few times. I mean, a guy like Zach Johnson, you know, I mean, he hasn't had the greatest of years, but I feel like Zach Johnson is the type of guy that the U.S. Open's never been the venue that set up the best for him. But I feel like Zach is a guy that could succeed there. I think he gets the ball in play off the tee. He's not going to hit it in the high grass much, if at all. And I think he can chip and putt it and play this golf course really well. And I think if the wind's up, you know, it's going to be a place that 3 or 4 or 5 under is going to win it. And Zach's been a guy that's been known to mud it around, especially at the majors. So, you know, he's a guy that you know, from 10,000 feet up, I've looked at it and said, you know, he's the kind of player I think would have a good chance. So somebody like that, you know, somebody that gets the ball in play. You know, the thing about Chambers that people always forget is, I mean, Chambers' green situation was an issue that, you know, nobody could really do anything about.
Right.
I mean, when Poana comes in like that, there's nothing you can really do. I mean, we played Chambers Bay, you know, 4 weeks before the U.S. Open. The greens were absolutely perfect. It just was an unfortunate situation that happens occasionally in golf, and there's not much you can do, really, to change that. I mean, unless you, you know, you get somebody to rip the greens up, you know, 5 days before a championship, which isn't going to happen. So, you know, I feel like Chambers was a place that people look back on a lot and say, well, the course wasn't in the best shape when, you know, it produced an unbelievable U.S. Open. And I think Erin Hills is a place that, you know, it's got so many unique and cool holes. It's got, you know, it's a par 72, which is something we haven't seen since 1992 in a U.S. Open. I mean,
wow.
that in and of itself is going to allow more birdies, more
right.
eagles and stuff like that. And, I mean, these par 5s are all reachable for these guys depending on the wind. I mean, one, you know, you can reach one if it's downwind with a mid-iron, even though it's 600 and something yards. 18, 700 yards, but it doesn't play 700 yards because the fairways are firm and fast. And if you hit a ball in it, and he gets to rolling on those things, you know, you'll see the long hitters be able to get there with maybe even a 5 wood or a 2 iron. So I just think it's unique and it's cool, and it ends on a par 5, and that's going to compare a lot of times to Chambers Bay, but I don't think it's going to play much like Chambers simply because I think it's going to be a lot windier, and I think that missing fairways here will be more penal than it was at Chambers.
Fantastic stuff. Talking to Shane Bacon here. For those who don't follow Shane on social media, Shane is a fantastic golfer who has played some professionally and posts tons of social media stuff of him playing. I bring this up because you are a basically scratch golfer. I'm a 14 handicap, somewhere between 14 and 17, depending on the day. I am your classic weekend hacker. You are a really, really, really good golfer. I'm wondering, as a broadcaster now, if your perspective as somebody who tried to do this and still can play at a really high level gives you a unique perspective versus somebody who may be a higher handicap player like myself.
Well, you know, it's not really, you know, the thing is when you're doing hosting or even doing interviews, you know, it's not really my job. I mean, you know, I might be able to scrap it around and shoot around par, shoot under par a couple times, but,
right.
you know, I mean, the people we have on our team to do those types of things are guys that have won majors, you know, Paul Azinger and Curtis Strange, or guys that have won multiple times on the PGA Tour and Brad Faxon, or, you know, one of the most heralded players in the history of the game is Julie Inkster. I mean, you know, those people are at a level where when they speak of the game, you listen. Now, I'm just some, you know, guy that tried to play mini tour golf for a few years and realized I wasn't good enough, and now, you know, I still get it around here and there. But, I mean, you know, that's not my job. You know, I mean, yeah, sure, it's nice that I was out there at times and can speak on the mini tour side of things. I mean, I've done that a few times. I talked to, you know, Stuart Hagestad about that when we were talking about, you know, post-masters, his, you know, his interest in playing professional golf. I mean, that's something I could speak on because
right.
I did that. I mean, I was out there grinding on the mini tours and trying to make it and, you know, knowing what the cut number would be and, you know, trying to make a 5-footer to shoot 71 instead of 72. I mean, those are the types of experiences that I can drum up if I need to. But, you know, when you're talking about U.S. Opens and U.S., you know, Women's Opens and Seniors and USAM and stuff like that, I mean, you know, my job is if I'm the last guy on the team, they're going to ask to be bringing up, you know, hey, talk about your experiences out there because that's just not my job. I mean, you know, it's a big stay in your lane business, you know, when you get to that position with some of these people. And, you know, my job is to set guys like Paul up, you know, to make the points he makes, and then he knocks it out of the park. You know, I mean, that's what they do, and that's why they're so good at it. I mean, you know, when I worked with Paul and Brad at the Amateur, and you're in the booth with those guys, you know, you don't have to do much. I mean, they know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They're really good at what they're talking about. They're really good at the points they make. I mean, Paul, you know, Paul busts his tail, you know, just analyze. He's always analyzing. You know, he might work 6 hours a day. He's analyzing 24. You know, that's just how his brain works.
Yeah, talking to Shane Bacon here on Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling. Shane, you know, what's interesting about Topgolf, and finally a Topgolf came to where I am in Central Jersey, is I was just stunned at how popular it became instantly, how popular Topgolf has taken off in an area where it's basically been solely through word of mouth. You obviously work for Topgolf. You cover the Topgolf tour. I'm somebody who is never a fan of simulator golf. It just drives me nuts. I just want to be out there for real. And I have been to Topgolf with a bunch of people to where I'm having to wait 5-10 minutes between when I hit, which gets me out of a rhythm. So it's not my preferred place to practice or have a golf-related night. It's a fantastic place for a social night. You surround yourself with guys who use Topgolf as a mechanism to play competitive golf. You know, this is the Topgolf tour. I'm wondering if, as somebody who has played competitive real golf, if it's looked the same to you, if it's felt the same to you as you've covered the tour, if the moments where someone's had to hit a huge shot at a big moment has felt the same as those who have to hit it playing what most people would call real golf.
Yeah, I mean, like, in that, you know, I mean, in that circumstance, in those circumstances, I mean, you know, last year, you know, the first year of the Topgolf Tour, I mean, we had teams in Vegas that were, you know, compiled mostly of mini tour players. I mean, there were a couple of groups of guys that were just amateur players that were good, you know, had good swings or wanted maybe a venue that wasn't kind of chock full of the mini tour type of players. But, I mean, it was incredible the way the nerves got to these guys, really. I mean, you know, you're playing for, I mean, if you think about this, after 08, there were not many purses on any mini tour that would give the winner $25,000, much less $50,000.
Right.
There was times, you know, back in 06 and 07 and stuff like that where you could win that. You know, there's a couple of events. I know there was one, you know, in South Dakota. There's a big event in Wyoming that paid pretty good. But, I mean, to have that much money out there and up for grabs, you really saw the pressure get to these guys as they went on. And it was something, it was a good question you asked because it was something I was interested in as well. I mean, are these guys going to tighten up? And, I mean, we saw a guy that didn't miss a target all day long miss one that was some 150 yards when he had to hit it in there. I mean, it was a must-make, and he missed the target. You know, it's basically like missing the green. So I would say, you know, absolutely, you know, the fact that there's real money up for grabs and these guys not just can use it, but they can use it to further their career, I would say it's probably as nervous as some of these guys have ever been playing golf.
That's fascinating. That just is absolutely fascinating to me. Let's flip back to the pros now. I'm so pumped about Zurich, and I'm so pumped about the format for this event because I think it's going to be a break in the schedule because what you get at Augusta is tension. What you get at Sawgrass is tension. What you get at the U.S. Open is massive tension. I think next week has a chance to be one of the most fun, relaxed weeks with seven of the top 10 in the world. And I do think you'll see huge gap between the best score and the worst score. But I think for those who can relax, play well, and contend, I think it's going to be a thrilling week.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. Again, this goes back to what we initially started talking about. I mean, you know, trying to find ways to make this stuff different and interesting. Because, you know, the majors are the majors, and you know, we're going to focus on those. But, you know, to make the Zurich interesting is something that took a monumental effort, and I think you're right. I think this is exactly what needed to happen, and I think it's going to be great. I mean, you know, I had Wesley Bryan on the podcast this week, and, you know, I asked him, I said, are you playing Zurich? And the answer was like me asking, are you playing the Masters? I mean, he was like, yeah, absolutely I am. You know, what do you think, I'm going to miss this?
Yeah.
And that's how excited they are to be in this field and to team up. And you're right. I mean, this is a great time in the schedule to do it. You know, it's right kind of in the middle of some big stuff, but there's not really huge events kind of cornering it into the schedule. And it allows players to go out there and have some fun. And I think these guys want that. You know, they have long seasons. They have long years. They don't get a lot of time to just go out and have a good time and goof off. And I think when you look at some of these, you know, late in the season two-man events and you see some of the names that play in them, I think at times it's surprising. You're like, wow, I can't believe that, you know, Gary Woodland and Matt Kuchar are taking the time to play in this. I can't believe that so-and-so and this person are playing in this. I mean, Jason Day and Adam Scott, you know, playing in the World Cup of Golf, stuff like that. And it's simply because of the format, I think. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be thrilling. It is a perfect storm of a great city to visit. You know, I mean, New Orleans is one of the best cities in the country to go visit for a week. It is a fun golf course. And it is a format that the players are going to embrace. And, I mean, I don't see how it doesn't do well. The only way it doesn't do well is if they get bad weather, really. And
yeah.
That's nothing you could predict.
And Shane has covered what was formerly the Franklin Templeton shootout and is now, I believe, the QBE shootout. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So he has seen that firsthand. Here's my final question for you, Shane. As we look at the players, I thought what Ricky Fowler did there in 2015 was going to be the springboard for a big-time major victory. It hasn't happened yet. And I think most people would think that he or Lee Westwood are now the best player never to win a major. But in my mind, if I was Ricky Fowler, I would say I've already won a major because of how the players turned out for him. Do you think this is the year that Ricky Fowler finally gets it done on a Sunday and maybe can win a thing like the U.S. Open where someone who's fairly accurate, which he is, could potentially pull this off?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jeremy, I got to be honest with you. Predicting major winners now, and I've said this and I've kind of stood on this mountain for a while, I mean, trying to predict a major winner is just such a hard business because, I mean, it's not 25 guys that can win it anymore.
Yeah.
It's not 50 guys that can win it anymore. I mean, it's the entire field that has a really good chance of continuing and competing. I mean, there's no fear in these young players, and maybe until Sunday. But at the same time, I mean, we just saw Ricky put himself in contention at the Masters. He got himself, you know, he made a birdie on the third hole on Sunday. It looked like he was going to start making a charge. He got the 6-under, and then he just completely falls apart. And, I mean, I've been on Team Ricky for a long time. I mean, I think the way he won the Players, I think he doesn't get enough credit for how he's played and what he's done. I mean, I think last year at the Waste Management, he got one of the worst breaks anybody got all year long with that tee shot on 17 that kicked into the water.
Yep.
I mean, he's still winning. You know, I mean, he's already won this year. He's still winning. It's just, it has to happen on a week that is one of four in the entire year. You know, that's the hard thing. So you've got to play well. You've got to get yourself in contention. You've got to avoid somebody that pulls a Stenson, you know, at Troon last year, like Phil talked about at the Masters. And then you've got to close it out. And, I mean, those are a lot of things that have to happen to come together. You just mentioned a couple guys. I mean, Lee Westwood's the perfect example. You look at his resume, it's unbelievable, the majors, yet he hasn't closed one out. Or you look at, I mean, you look at a guy like Luke Donald, or you look at a guy, you know, I mean, look at Colin Montgomery in his career. I mean, these are players that put themselves in the spot a ton of times and either ran into the red-hot golfer or just weren't able to make the putt at the end. So, you know, it goes back. I always say when people see a young player and they go, oh, that person's going to win a major. And before, obviously, the Masters, I always said that about Sergio. I said, yeah, we all said that about Sergio when he was 19. You know, we all said he's going to win a major for sure. And, I mean, it took him until 2017 to do it. So, I mean, it's just, will he win a major this year? I think he's capable of it, absolutely. I think he has the game to do it. And I just think that you've got to have three or four things come together. And I also think the older you get, the harder it is to win one. I think the older you get, the harder it is. You go to every major, the pressure's there, the questions are there. It's not like the Players. It's not like the Zurich. It's not like the Waste Management. Nobody's asking Ricky when he shows up at TPC Scottsdale, so you think you're finally going to win? You know,
yeah.
Nobody asks that question.
Yeah.
So it's just, you go to the U.S. Open, and it's these questions are fired at you. Plus, you're playing a venue where you're intentionally making it harder to win. That's the whole goal of these organizations. They want to make it tough and rough, and they want to make it, you know, kind of weed out the players that aren't completely 100% on top of their game. So I think Ricky will win a major, sure. I think he's got plenty of talent, but, I mean, will he do it this year? I'd say the chances are probably not, just because there's only three left and there's 140 guys in all the fields, you know? I mean, I think there's a just as good a chance that Rory wouldn't win one, or Dustin wouldn't win one, or, you know, Jimmy Walker wouldn't win one. I mean, it's, you know, there's just, the major thing is so funny to me because you said it. I mean, what he did at that Players' Championship was unbelievable, and it was so fun, and it was so clutch, and he hit great shot after great shot, and he was answered, and it was thrilling, and all that stuff, but, you know, now we sit here going, will he be able to close one out? And, I mean, that's on the heels of him having a bad final run at the Masters, which happens to a lot of people.
Yeah, and What's crazy about that too, Shane, and you hinted at it basically right there, this is what Phil has gone through. Phil has had to answer the same exact question every single year at the U.S. Open, and the I firmly believe that guys like Ricky and Phil and Rory at Augusta, the formula for them to win the one that they need to win is to come from behind. Because when all the attention and pressure and questions are on somebody else, if you pull a Johnny and shoot 63 on Sunday, that, I believe, is the way to do it, because it just is unexpected, it's free, and that's what Ricky did at Sawgrass, storming ahead when nobody was focused on him, boom, and that's what, and that's what got it for him.
Yeah, I mean, and frankly, the same recipe for Sergio winning at Augusta.
Yeah.
Sergio let the lead slip away, Justin Rose takes a big lead, and it makes Sergio, you know, focus in and play aggressively, which is how Sergio plays his best golf. And he goes on to win, and he gets a good break. I mean, Rose, you know, hits a good putt on 18 in regulation that doesn't go in, and then he hits that tee shot right. And, I mean, it hits a tree, and we were standing right there. Me and KDZ are standing right by where his ball is, and I'm like, I mean, he's in jail. He's got no shot. And, I mean, those are the types of things that have to happen. I mean, we've seen it happen over the course of the history of golf. We've seen it happen so many times. You know, most of the time when somebody has to do something, Phil in 04, O'Meara, you know, these people having to charge and win, and that's how they win that first major. It's just, I mean, look, we saw it at Oakmont last year. Shane Lowry has a big lead going into the final round and completely falls apart because he's got to sleep on it for, you know, 30 hours. I mean, that's not the easiest thing to do.
No, and final thing real quick. As somebody who is down there, my contention was that Justin Rose would have been better off if it had stayed further up in the Pine Straw. Am I correct on that?
It was, you know, what's so funny, we had this conversation when the ball landed, is, you know, Augusta does not miss a detail, as you know.
Right.
But the trees, you know, the trees on the right side there on 18, there's not really a hole. You know, there's not really a spot to hit it. And I can promise you that's a strategic move. I mean, they made those trees on the right dense enough to where if a player hits it over there, which is a bailout because you don't want to go left, if you hit it right, it's going to be really hard to find a window, if there's a window at all. So we were standing over there, and I looked at KDV, and I said, you know, this is where Angel Cabrera hit it, you know, when he ended up winning in that playoff against Kenny Perry and Chad Campbell. And about 5 seconds later, the ball hits the tree and kicks right in front of us, and I went, well, there you go. But I mean, he had no shot. And frankly, I'm not sure if there was a shot to be had. I mean, those trees, like I said, there's not a lot of holes in them. There's not a lot of spots to hit golf shots out of. So, you know, it's just a bad tee shot at an inopportune time. And, you know, now Justin Rose has got to sit back and say, I mean, this has happened to me twice in the last 3 years at Augusta. I mean, he puts himself there so, so close. And it goes back to our point about winning these majors is, I mean, that looked like it was going to be Rose's easily. And we sit here, you know, 2.5 weeks after, and Sergio Garcia's wearing his green jacket.
He is Shane Bacon. You can see him on Fox and on FoxSports.com. You will see him on their USGA telecast, which I believe your first telecast this year. It is the actual U.S. Open this year, correct?
Oh yeah, we're starting with a bang. No reason. No, we don't need no practice. We're going right into it.
There you go. He also does some stuff for PGA Tour Live. He's a part of the Top Golf Tour. And he hosts the Clubhouse podcast and sends out the Clubhouse newsletter, and that podcast is extremely good, whether you are sick or not. Shane Bacon, thanks for coming on Teeing It Up. I appreciate it.
Hey, anytime.
That is Shane Bacon. Thank you for listening to Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling. We'll see you next week. Have a fantastic day, everybody.